April 6, 2023, it's the Watt from Pedro Show.
We'll be right back.
Watt from Pedro Show. Happy Thursday. Start off with Straight No Chaser, live at the Newport Jazz Festival 1958, Miles Davis with John Coltrane. And then we had Dim Northstar from Fruit Bats. Because of those Estonian software engineers with their Skype invention, I got with me.
Yeah. Hey.
From... You can tell I'm not man alone, people, because he jumped right on before his invite. But, yeah, I got Eric from the Fruit Bats. Welcome aboard, Eric.
Thanks for having me.
Where are you talking to me from? North Carolina?
No, I'm in L.A., actually.
Whoa, okay.
Yeah. Okay. Are you in Pedro?
I'm in the harbor part, yeah.
Nice. Yeah, I'm like, just, like, due north of you, like all the way up the 110, sort of Highland Park.
So what am I thinking of, Merge Records? Is that why I'm thinking North Carolina, Mac? Mac's a beautiful man.
Oh, such a beautiful man. Yeah. Merge is, they're Durham folks. Yeah.
Okay. But let's go way back. Because I want people to learn about your journey through music. So please, Eric, bring your earliest musical recollection.
I've been listening to to these interviews of yours too. So I was like, I got
21 years and 10 months and I'm still blowing clams.
Yeah. I love it. But I was like, I knew you were going to ask me that. So I was like, really going back. And you know, what's the first song I think I remember?
Well, remember, it's a Watt from Pedro Show. So there's no hard questions and there's no wrong answers.
This is an easy question, which is, the first song I remember is Day After Day by Badfinger. Which is like, I was born in 76. That song came out in 71, but I think it was still like...
In fact, the guy who wrote it, I think, hung himself before you were born.
He probably did, yeah.
And like then the bass player a little bit after, I think early 80s.
Yep, one of the tragic bands. But like,
terrible.
For some reason,
you know what? Yeah. They were preyed upon. There was some son of a bitch manager.
Yeah, I think so too.
And I think Pete Ham actually wrote something in a letter, a goodbye letter, saying such. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, but that song always has like a mystical quality to me, and I think I like heard it in the womb or something like that.
Well, they had the curse of being signed to Apple, maybe one of the first ones, and then kind of sounding like them, but they were their own band. You know, Can't Live, right? Harry Nilsson had a big hit.
Of course, yeah. He was, I guess they were recording it across the hall from him or something.
Or down the hall, and he heard it, and he said, hey, can I try that too? Well, they both did it. There's two different versions.
Yeah.
Yeah, but the guy had a incredible voice, but he wouldn't do gigs.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
So let me ask you this, Eric. The pad you grew up in, was there musical instruments?
I moved around a lot as a kid, apartments and things, so there was never musical instruments, but my grandma had a piano in the house, and I think that was probably like when I would go visit grandma.
Yeah, when you visited her, did you jump on that piano?
Yeah, and tinker around on that and make it kind of weird.
Did you have to go through the experience? I mean, this almost... I've had a lot of guests on the show almost turned off to music because of this experience, but the experience of the piano lessons.
No one had me take piano lessons.
Oh, good. Spared.
Yeah.
Spared the experience. Let me ask you this. In school, were you in the choir, the marching band, or shit like that?
Both, yeah. But only in junior high, and then my junior high band teacher told me I had no musical talent.
And what instrument were you trying to play?
I was playing the baritone tuba.
The baritone tuba. Well, the tuba's already baritone. You probably mean baritone horn, which is kind of a cousin of the...
Baritone horn, that's right.
Cousin of the euphonium.
Yeah, so I don't even know the name of it, so it shows you how
There's a baritone horn. But then it has a cousin called the euphonium. They're very similar because I know because I got one in the late 80s on tour. And just now, after, 30-something years, I'm learning how to play it. So it's just a coincidence you brought that. Same mouthpiece as a bone, 12C.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, so you were in the bass clef, though. I'm into that. What about the first record you bought with your own money, Eric?
First record with my own money was... probably a Men at Work album.
What about the first gig you went and saw?
First gig I went and saw was Def Leppard. Child of the 80s.
Okay. Now, not after school graduating, but in the afternoon, did you get into that garage band, basement band, bedroom band thing?
Yeah, it was four track for me too, because
you're talking Man Alone.
Yeah, so I'm a little too old for like the early days of GarageBand and like digital recording. So I was still in the cassette world. And yeah, I got a Tascam Porta O2. I bought it from my buddy for $80. And I was just sort of more interested in creating a world. You know, this is like mid-90s, still very indie rock time, and I didn't have any ambition. I just wanted to make a sound.
So you didn't really play with other people. You're doing sound on sound with yourself?
Yeah, I was doing sound on sound with myself, and then that formed into like an early band that was kind of like a loud, spacey indie rock band in like the late 90s. But we didn't play a lot of gigs. Like it was pretty unambitious.
Or just jamming and prac. And were you writing material, or were you trying to copy off records?
I was writing material. We did some covers too. We did like a Modern Lovers, like early Jonathan Richman Modern Lovers cover. But I was just sort of impersonating him. And like we did a Galaxy 500 cover. We were like, we liked that kind of like sort of 70s and 80s like indie, and that was kind of like spacey. And
you know what? I got to tell you right off the bat, I don't dig fucking labels and genre names and shit. So if you want to get on Watt's good side, you just let that go alone and say music, music, and you guys were trying to find you're trying to find your own voice.
Yeah,
but the weird trip thing about that is the way to find your own voice is by copying other people's voice, like you said with Mr. Richman.
That was exactly what I was doing.
I did the same thing with Eric Bloom and Richard Hell and John Doe, and I did the same thing.
Yeah, so just when you're young and you're finding yourself and you're like, I'm just gonna rip this guy off, and then hopefully. It's best when you mess it up so bad that it doesn't sound like them, and then that's the most original thing you can do is blow the idea of ripping somebody off.
Well, in comedy, they've got this thing called the impersonator, right? So they make a whole career out of that. Remember when I was a teenager, there was a guy named Rich Little. His whole thing was fake, and he was other dudes.
Yeah, I remember Rich Little.
so you ain't that young.
I'm still from the era where I can remember that stuff.
Okay. And his whole thing, Frank Gorshin, too, these guys were mimics. They could do their voice. Of course, they were stylistic people like Humphrey Bogart, Jimmy Cagney. I mean, you could identify these voices, right? And I got to say, Mr. Richman, I know he was way into Velvet Underground, but I think he started the same way. He probably started copying them.
Yeah, absolutely. It's so much of that sounded kind of like that VU era, like, or Loaded, Velvet Underground stuff.
Do you remember your first gig?
Yeah, it was, beyond, like, sort of playing open mics and stuff like that solo, like, my first band gig was at a place in Chicago, a super dive bar called The Mutiny, that actually just closed down, there was a hole in the floor and the stage. I remember that you had to stay away from because you could fall through, you know, like the classic thing. There was water dripping from it was like a real dive bar gig, but like
and it wasn't these guys you played with after school. You had moved on from that band.
Yeah Like when I was in high school, like I actually didn't even have a band in high school. This was not until I was like in my early 20s that I finally heard that sound.
Whose pad did you practice at?
We practiced at my buddy's. He was like, we all lived in Chicago, you know, mostly in apartments, but I had one friend who lived on kind of like a big boulevard.
Well, I'm gonna suggest it was the drummy.
It was the bass player, actually.
Wow, because using your drummy, you don't want to have to set up and tear down that shit all the time.
True. Yeah, I think they had kind of like a band / crash pad, like an actual house with a basement, which was a rarity in Chicago.
Yeah. Look, you gave me this music here. Jesus, Tap Dancing Christ.
Yeah.
Okay, let me play it.
Yeah. Lord, I can see forgiveness. Charging fully forward, I can see what's not. I can get to more faster. I can get to more faster. Call me by whichever angel name you've got. Call me by whichever angel name you've got. Charging fully forward, I can seek forgiveness. Charging fully forward, I can seek what's not.
4.
Do you remember this place? We used to call this our home. We were the perfect day.
For Pedro Show, that chunk of music start off with Fruit Bats doing Jesus Tap Dancing Christ. It's good to be home. Then Still House Plants. I saw these guys last week. I think they're living in London now. I met at college in Glasgow. They're really good. Power Trio, but no bass. That's okay. Pockets. No. More, Faster. Pockets is the guy by voices, Bob Pollard. Of course, every other month, it's got to be a new album, right? This man puts the P in prolific people. Samuel Locke Ward, another cat who does buttloads of fucking releases. Out of Iowa City, Gin and Tonic. Kato Hideki with the tail of a snake. Probably should be Hideki Kato. Backwards, right? The Hatch out of, this is Japan too, but northern part, Hokkaido. Volvo. About a Swedish car. Why not? It's one big world, people. And then finally, Fruit Bats. We used to live here, which is kind of like what we're talking about now. You used to live in this big house and be able to jam. So that first gig at the Leaky Place, was it a success or failure?
It was a success to me in that, like, I think just, like, my friends showed up, but it felt great. And it's like, you know, that like, I do remember that first time just getting in a practice space with people and like hearing that noise of guitar bass drums, like that's just like, it's a cliche, but it's like one of the most beautiful feelings. So it was like, it was nice to take that and then actually have like an audience, albeit a really small one, but yeah, it felt great. It's like,
especially they don't throw shit unless you're GG Allen. Then
exactly. Yeah.
It would be a failure.
Yeah.
Now let me ask you this. You know that you said you're writing original shit, even with those, when you're younger, right, out of high school, did any of that stuff survive to this first gig?
Yeah. I mean, it was kind of like a culmination of a whole bunch of different.
So you would bring your tunes to different cats that you played with.
Yeah, exactly. And I didn't start off playing covers because I couldn't play music well enough. So I couldn't even figure out how to like make a cover song, let alone like figure out what the chords are. So I started writing right off the bat because it was like, the only thing I could do, you know, was
just
like,
I knew a
few chords.
Do you remember the first song you wrote?
Yeah, the first song I wrote, I was probably like a junior in high school, and we'd read Moby Dick in English class, and I wrote like a whaling song, a song about whales.
Well, you know, the book is like half an encyclopedia entry on whales, right?
That's what I mean, and I think I was like, I don't remember the book very well.
Well, the other part is all these different kinds of people, which for those days was kind of a different book. Remember, he wakes up in bed with Queequod.
I do remember that part, but yeah.
Call me Ishmael. And then actually it's his coffin that saved, right? He's the only one that lives to tell the tale.
That's right. Yeah.
Ahab is just obsessed. Ahab will not let go.
Yeah. So that's my first song.
Idolater. True idolater. So, okay, what happens after that first gig? You start doing a whole bunch? Or what's this band called? This ain't Fruit Bats yet, is it?
No, it's not Fruit Bats yet. This band was called iRobot. And we did like a handful of shows.
Was this a takeoff from Mr. Heinlein's book?
Kinda, yeah. It was like
you know,
onion.
You take the K out of punk rock and you got pun rock.
Yeah. yeah. That was the era of that too, but
that's
all
right. Sorry.
Yeah, we played stuff, but I was and then
what happened? Then, what happened to iRobot?
It kind of just fizzled out, you know, in the way that sometimes those things.
Yeah,
happen.
Yeah, they run their course, right?
Yeah, and then I ended up. Not long after joining this band, Caliphone, that's like this, I don't know if you know that band, but they're great, and I loved them. They had a band called Red Red Meat on Sub Pop that I was obsessed with, and kind of got to know them. They were all about 10 years older than me, and they really took me like on my first like real kind of like indie rock tour. So I ended up joining somebody else's band as a side person, which was a huge thing for me.
How? Like you answered an ad?
No, it's like a friend of a friend or something.
Okay,
connect.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
And what'd you end up doing for them?
I played all kinds of weird stuff. I played.
Oh,
I
so
played
you were like the multi-instrumental guy.
Yep, multi-instrumental guy, harmony singer. I played a lot of like banjo through effects and Casio keyboards.
Now,
and,
we didn't go through this. We didn't go through how you learned all these instruments.
Yeah, I mean, I was just learning them.
All I know is about his baritone horn, and then you stop.
Yeah, yeah. I just sort of, it was one of those where I wanted to make a sound, you know, and so yeah, I was, you know, jack of all trades, master of none. But and
none of this stuff with lessons, all autodidact.
Exactly. Yeah, by ear.
Yeah.
And then Caliphone was this pretty experimental and weird band that was pretty out, and which was great because it's kind of like. You can fail on stage and it's okay. It was like a proving ground, you know?
Yeah.
Let
the freak flag fly.
Exactly.
Yeah. Can you remember your first gig with them?
Yeah, it was opening for the aforementioned Guided by Voices.
Actually. Oh, wow. Mr. Pollard.
Yeah. And I was so nervous because it just felt very huge to me. And I was a big Guided by Voices fan too. I was so nervous. I remember being almost blinded by nerves. And I said, I hope that this building catches on fire. And that we don't have to play this show, and then I'll never play music again. I was just extremely
nervous. You were
wishing
for that?
Yeah.
Really? Well, I'm glad it didn't fucking happen.
I'm glad it didn't fucking happen either. And my life kind of began after that, too. And I sort of, like, the Caliphone guys were, like, they were, like, big brothers to me, you know, and sort of taught me.
Did you tour with them?
Yeah, we toured a lot. And I sort of, like, saw the world and kind of got an idea of how this all works. You know, it was like one of those, I had never been taught that this was a thing that was possible. And then it suddenly became a thing that was possible.
And what about in the studio?
I went in the studio with them too, because, you know, this was like late 90s, early 2000s. They had their own label too and a studio. And it was almost like a clubhouse, you know, it was like my first time feeling a part of a thing. And so that was Tim from Calip. They ran this small label, and they put my first record out because it was like a real all in the family.
You're talking like an Eric solo record.
Yeah, that's kind of what it ended up being. Because I didn't even tell them that I was writing songs like for the first like 6 months I knew them, because I didn't want to feel like I was
diluting your thing for them.
Yeah, exactly. Or like that I was like trying to worm my way
or
into
maneuvering.
Their scene.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah, and then finally I was like, oh, yeah, I play some stuff. And Tim right away was just like, we'll put this out, you know? Like, and so he put me in, the, like, a real studio for the first time, which was their studio, that kind of part of their
I think that's a smart move, because when you let somebody express themselves, they might develop shit that they'll bring to your proj.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. So,
I think the best thing a musician can do for another musician is provide that O-word opportunity.
Yeah, absolutely. And, yeah, it was just like, if I hadn't joined that band, I'm not sure what would have happened. I mean, maybe I would have figured it out, but, like, it was, you don't want to think of it in, like.
Yeah, because things happen, and then the course, you know, and it keeps evolving, and coincidences, and then well-planned things, and it's a mixture of all that shit.
Yeah, yeah, you never know.
Right. So, they put out your record. Do you start doing Eric gigs without Califone?
Yeah, so actually, like, the first Fruit Bats gig was at the Empty Bottle in Chicago, and basically the band was Califone.
I finally played Empty Bottle. I liked it.
Oh, I love it. It's a classic place. You know, it's been around a long time now.
Right. But I never played there, you know, and finally.
Yeah. I had seen so many shows there. So, and then, and that was a kind of a home base for Califone. So, yeah, the first couple Fruit Bats shows, the lines were blurred between who was Califone and who was Fruit Bats.
Well, there was probably the Califone guys doing Fruit Bats songs.
Yeah, that was pretty much it. And they had been kind of the band on the record too. So then we're playing gigs, and then, we actually, like, you know, Califone wasn't a huge band, but other bands loved them. So if you got in with their scene, like, other bands would be like, oh, you're friends with those guys. You know, they were like a mark of quality or something. So we were able to get gigs.
Open doors.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. And so what happens, it evolves for you making a Fruit Bats that ain't Califone?
Yeah, yeah. And then somewhere like, it's like, yeah, I was still trying to find my own voice too. It was still very, like, influenced by what I was doing in California. Sure, that was all I knew at that moment. But, eventually kind of started finding my own vibe. And then kind of miraculously, I got signed to Sub Pop. Like, after that first record came out, you know, meeting other bands and everything too. And like, Sub Pop came knocking, which was like, crazy.
Bruce Pavitt.
Unexpected. Yeah. Yeah, this was post Pavitt. Pavitt had left a little while before, but yeah, okay. John Poneman and Megan Jasper.
I remember when they had U Men.
Yeah, of course.
You remember U Men? They were kind of a birthday party.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, I loved all those Sub Pop bands, so just to be part of that continuum felt crazy. So,
well, a lot of those bands had their own sound. You know, it's weird when bands started, like, picking bands that all sounded the same, like a branding. That's one thing I really dug about SST. All the bands sound so much different.
Oh, yeah. I love all those SST releases for that whole era.
So for Sub Pop, you don't use Califone guys. So you get, like, kind of breed of some little colony of Fruit Bats for your own thing?
Yeah. It started to be, and it's sort of, like, similar to that Guided by Voices thing where it's, like, the band name, but it's whoever, you know?
Well, he can call it fucking Boston Spaceships still. Look, we're going to have to continue because we're at the end of the first hour, April 6, 2023, Dish Watt Peter Show. Special guest Eric from Fruit Bats. Hold time for hour two! April 6, 2023. It's the second hour of Watch for Pete Rose.
You know I don't control the weather, but I can pray that the moon will rise and maybe somehow make it all better for a while. Maybe we could write out a letter, or we could cast. Ask if he would call you love that makes it
sangre que está viendo, tiemblas de charcos de sangre que está viendo, tiemblas de charcos de sangre que estaba viendo, tiemblas de charcos de sangre que estaba viendo, tiemblas de charcos de sangre que estaba viendo, tiemblas.
Kleiner Wappe, Nimmersatt. Das Essen was, sehr lecker. Die Kleiner Wappe, Nimmersatt. Das Essen was, sehr lecker. Thank you.
Thank you.
Plot for Pedro show. Start off the second hour with See the World by Night, Fruit Bats. Then Alexander Hackett continuing with his big piece about this imaginary young man in Berlin. Well, I guess he's middle-aged by now in the story. Helmet, 35, medicine student. Maybe I should say. Puppet Midnight out of England with Die kleine Raupe Nimmersatt. And in parentheses, he's got Caterpillar song. Not after that, out of Texas with Flight of the Hypercircular Roosters. Monday UFO with Refectory. No, Rectory. Not Refectory. Rectory, like a priest thing, right? And then finally, Fruit Bats with Meridian. Okay, so you're getting a record ready for Sub Pop, right? And you're putting a band together. Now, do you just work on getting this record together, or do you do gigs with the new band?
Just, like, we had been doing a bunch of gigs on the previous record, so it was like, then, you know, I went into album-making mode, and it was, like, me and a producer and, like, various people kind of coming in and out. But all my records were still, I'm still, like, even when I'm in studios, I'm still kind of was operating off of that four-track principle of just kind of, like...
Man Alone, right, right.
Yeah, sure, Man Alone, building a vibe from the ground up.
So, if I get it straight, it's like you're not really trying to build a sound by doing gigs with a band. You're bringing in, like, studio stuff, right?
Yeah. It took me years to figure out how to do, to sort of do the work it out on the road thing. Like I couldn't get out of this kind of like mentality of just wanting to like be kind of a studio person, but
right.
Like,
Donald Fagen, Walter Becker.
Yeah.
Now what you're thinking, but, and it's probably not whole albums, right? You're probably thinking tune by tune, like who would be good singing this? Who would be good on bass here? Who would be like that maybe? So in a way, you're kind of a producer man also.
Yeah, in a way, and like obviously working with these cool producers and stuff too, but like, and you know, starting to have like not huge budgets, but you know, modest indie rock.
Well, who's the cat that does a lot of engineering for them? Jack,
like Jack Endino, the OG guy.
Yeah, did you work with him?
No, but I was working with this guy Brian Deck, who he'd been the drummer of the band Red Red Meat. And who were also on Sub Pop, but also part of the kind of Caliphone collective too. And I did my first like three records with him. So
okay. And he did the knobs and what, like co-produce?
He very much. I mean, he produced because I was even though I was like I had a lot of ideas, I wasn't totally ready to be.
You were like the shot caller, but you asked him to make it be so.
Exactly. Yeah. So it was like when I hear those now, I'm like they sound, but those were back in the slightly days before, like, I don't know, whatever, the indie rock boom, where you could kind of be learning on the job, too. Like, I feel like...
No, like skateboarding. Yeah. I mean, when you don't get on the skateboard and start pulling ollies, you got to fall down a little bit.
Yeah. I always say nowadays, though, you have to be these younger artists and stuff, like, God bless them, like, it's harder. You kind of can't make a record like that anymore. You got to come screaming out of the gates, or maybe you don't have to, but, like, it was cool and unique that I got to be on Sub Pop and figuring my shit out, too.
Orson Welles, do you remember the last work he did? It was these Masson brothers, and he said, you know, we will sell no wine before it's time.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's like Two-Buck Chuck fucking on top, you know.
Yeah.
But anyway, you know, maybe things are different now. But, I mean, people develop the way they develop, and you had your own path, and that's why I think it's interesting to enlighten people. You know, you talking about it. So what about that first time with him?
Yeah, the first time making that record or just,
yeah.
just being out? Yeah, it was like, I made the record. And
because you kind of grouped them together as three records.
Yeah, it was three records. And those were definitely like, they all felt kind of like me finding my footing, you know, for the first few. And a lot of touring and like, you know, it didn't get like huge, but it was just like, indie rock, jammy kano touring, you know, like
What about the road band, right? Like you said, there was such a split between studio and playing gigs. How did you decide on who you wanted to tour with?
Road band, I had a realization that my very first tour, every single person in my band I had maybe gone to high school with at some point.
Really?
That's like how young I was and like what the... those are like the only people I knew, you know? And then, and then it was just different people every time because I was so broke. I didn't have any money to pay people, so they were kind of like hired guns, but they had to be hired guns.
Or like interns, like interns.
Yeah, yeah. I was like, do you want to
You want to learn on the job? You want to learn on the job? Right.
Yeah, you want to like leave Chicago in the wintertime and go to California for some shows or something? You know, like just it's the attractiveness of it was like not the money.
One place I read somewhere, payment isn't always in the coin.
Yeah.
Look, I want to play this Tacoma. Nice town in Washington State.
I'm not afraid to die.
for Pedro Show. Started that chunk of music off with Fruit Bats doing Tacoma. And Eric knows about Rick King, Guitar Maniacs. Great Pat.
Is Tacoma kind of like the Pedro of Seattle, maybe? Like, well, has that, like, kind of cool harbor vibe to it?
Actually, it's where the harbor started. It was way bigger than Seattle in the old days. But you know what was bigger both than Tacoma and Seattle? It was actually Spokane in the fucking east.
Absolutely.
For a long time, yeah. Waterfalls down the middle of the street. Let me tell the people, St. Hubert's Key, Who Are We? Then GAS Drummers with K. Yeva El Rio. Jail in a Bird from Hidden Forces Trio and Raul Catanzano. And Fine Fruit Bats with Sick of This Feeling. So was Tacoma like a tune you wrote on? Do you write stuff when you're on tour?
Sometimes. Like if I got the gumption to do it.
What would we call it? A tour spiel, right?
Yeah, Tacoma was I actually lived in Tacoma for a short time, so it's a little bit about that experience and like a little bit.
Oh, so you know about the Tacoma Dome then? It looks like a Big Mac, right?
Yep, yeah, it's the world's largest wooden dome, apparently. So yeah.
right. Yeah. You can see it from the freeway, people, if you're on I-5. Yeah. How long did you live there?
I lived in Tacoma for like not very long, less than a year, but then we moved up to Seattle for a little while.
Well, you got a tune out of it.
Yeah, I got a tune out of it. Yeah, I lived in Tacoma and Seattle and Portland for a time.
Yeah, so, but you didn't give me a Portland song. You didn't give me a Seattle song. You gave me a Tacoma song.
Exactly. I used Tacoma as the like a representation of that whole region, kind of sort of like an avatar, you know?
The sound. Actually, it's a sound, because it's way bigger than the harbor.
Yeah.
Yeah. And a lot of rain, a little bit.
Yep. Oh, yeah.
Now they got big snows there, and you know, things are changing. And stuff.
Yeah, sometimes.
And then, how long you live in Seattle?
I lived in Seattle for a couple years. It was sort of just like I had been going there a lot. People
because of the Sub Pop thing, right?
Yeah, because of the Sub Pop thing, I was just sort of like there a lot and liked it. And then I met a girl who later became my wife, who still is, and she was living there, so I went for a girl too. But I was sort of like it was calling to me from Chicago, I guess.
And there was some Portland involved also?
There was some Portland involved, and now I've been in LA for some time now. But yeah, just the West Coast was always had a pull for me.
Okay. You know the old way to get from Chicago to SoCal?
Route 66.
Remember that? Get your kicks on Route 66.
Oh, yeah.
It would go from Chi-Town, you know, through Joplin, Oklahoma City, and a lot of I-40 nowadays, and end up at PCH and Sunset Boulevard.
Yeah, I think maybe Colorado Boulevard through Pasadena is 66.
Well, that's part of it, but the last stretch is Sunset Boulevard, and it goes and ends up with T-Bones into PCH.
Yeah.
Any stable cats that stayed with the touring band?
For the past 5 years or so. But that's been cool and sort of like makes for like a better live show. You can just drop right in and because now I have a huge catalog. You got to learn.
No, what I'm asking is, did that overlap with recording bands?
Yes. In the last couple of records, it's been I've made records with these guys that I'm running around with, too. So which is really, really nice.
So you then it's not just total studio experiences. Some of the stuff you play for people before you record it?
Yeah. And actually, like, I started, it was like it took me 9 years in to kind of like get my shit together. A, have a little bit of money to pay people too, and start being like, hey, this is going to like, this has to dovetail with the live show too, and has to kind of like feel like something. You know, it's like you go out there and you're like, I just got better at knowing what a live show was supposed to sound like even. So
that's what experience does to you, people.
Yeah.
It's happened. Look, we're at the end of the second hour, April 6, 2023. Dish Wap Pedro Show special guest, Eric from Fruit Bats. Hold time, hour three. April 6, 2023. It's the third hour. The Wap from Pedro Show.
Clear car. in a vain attempt to explain myself.
Oh,
Watford Pedro Show. Start off the third hour. Fruit Bats doing the Deep Well. Treasure Grundo after that with Chezzy here. Then Girls in Synthesis pulling teeth. DJ Flugvel Ogeimskip. I don't mean to ruin Dutch. I'm sorry. Let Go. That's in English. I fucked that one up, too. All the languages. Equal opportunity fucker up or what? Not on purpose. So. Himmel Schiff Excelsior with Sick Bay Class Part 2. Key or Chi or Qui or... I played with these guys a couple times. My knees. And I got fucked up knees, people. Fruit Bats, finally, with Russian River Valley. You know there's a Russian River by the city in San Francisco. North
yeah,
America,
that's named after. Gurdonville. It's from up there, and when okay. I first was, she would tell me.
You know
the name
who lives
that
in that area?
Place, yeah.
Baseman, yeah. Les Claypool.
Yep, yeah. She's from the same town where he lives, Sebastopol.
Oh, that's right. That's right. And he does wine. I think has a vineyard or something.
Yeah, yeah. So I remember hearing the word Russian River Valley and thinking that she was saying it in this like quirky colloquial way, like rushing, you know, but dropping her G, not realizing that it's the word Russian, like as in Russia.
You know, I played the theater there where there was a fucking, you could see the line where they had a flood. You know, it was like 8 feet high.
Oh, yeah, it floods like crazy.
Right, every year.
So
people, it's like the country Russia because they were there a long time ago. That's why we got a bear on the flag.
Yeah.
So you just had some more pun rock, right? Yeah, that's all
yeah,
right.
Yeah, more pun rock,
well,
yeah.
Well, you know, and I was seeing a little water theme there. What about the Deep Well? Let me ask you this.
Yeah.
Eric, are you a guy that says, hey, man, I wrote the songs. Why should I have to talk about them?
Probably I used to, but now I don't care. Now I'm like, I'm happy enough that anybody wants to ask me anything about anything.
Okay.
So, yeah.
I just wanted to check.
I'll talk about them. That song's like, it's kind of a, it took me a really long time to write that one, and it's like a song about writing a song, which I always like that theme.
Let's use that as an example about your process. Yeah. Do you make demos?
I make demos. Demos are always part of the writing process for me, too. I think it kind of comes from that four-track background, you know, where I'm like, I want to hear a world first before I start writing. So, demos are always kind of a part of it. And now
Can I ask you, have you got like a trove? Do you have some place where you store licks and words and kind of things that can be used down the road?
Yeah, I write a lot of things down in notebooks. And then, yeah, come up with little musical ideas. The iPhone has been a great thing for that because you got your whole little voice memo thing in there. So, yeah.
All right. I got a little Sony recorder, but the same thing, my fucking memory. If I didn't have that shit, bye-bye.
Yeah, absolutely.
So do these things evolve? They start out one way, and then as you develop it, is that what you mean? It's got to live in a world?
Yeah, and I call it taking the wrong turn, you know, like when you're – and it's the thing I was saying about, like, let's say you're influenced by something, and you're like, I want it to sound like this, but you don't know how to make it sound like that, so then it really sounds like you. That's like my writing, too, is just kind of like – I'm not like Brian Wilson where I got a tape recorder in my brain. It's like – it maybe sounds like something in my brain, and I know it's going to be totally different when it comes out the other side, and that's good, you know.
And what about to manifest it in reality, you're going to – because it's not going to be a one-man band in the studio. And I know you said you're using a lot of guys you play with, but do you ever write for people like, man, I'd like to hear Bob Mould sing that. Maybe I call Bob Mould up.
I mean, I would.
No, if that was for example. Yeah. Me too. I would love to clap.
No, big Bob Mould fan too. So yeah. No, I mean, I'm usually thinking for myself, and every now and again, I've been asked to write for other people, but that's like you get asked, so then you sort of put yourself into that mindset of writing for them. But I've never like written something and said like, you know, so and so should really do this one. It's usually like I'm always writing for me.
Okay, but you're using other people. You're not using, but you're asking people to do certain things for you.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
Because, like, I'm hearing women voices. I know that ain't you.
Yeah, and me. I got a really high voice, so sometimes my grandma.
Oh, so maybe you fooled what? Yeah, maybe
yeah,
you fooled
yeah. A long time ago, my grandma, when she was alive, she heard some of my music, and she said, "Who's that nice girl singing all the lead vocals?" And I was like, "That would be me."
You know who's from Chicago who had a good falsetto? Curtis Mayfield.
Oh, of course. Yeah, incredible.
What was it? The Impressions, right? He was like still a teenager and had a label.
Yeah.
Yeah. I got to see his last gig before that shit fell on him in Brooklyn and paralyzed him. He was doing a tour of, he was doing tours of city halls. He played Long Beach across the harbor here. Look, let's play the last chunk, yeah? It all comes back. Show last music for this edition. Chunks start off with Fruit Bats doing All Comes Back. Have a Nice Life. They put out this album of their demos. See, that's what you do, people. You make demos because down the road you get the second wind, right? And this is a defenestration song. Fruit Bats, finally. Waking up in Los Angeles, which I guess eventually happened to you. A true story,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah, yeah.
So what is next?
About to tour. Heading out in like 3 days to tour for 2 months on this record, and we'll see what happens.
Okay. And what if people wanted to find information on this tour, is there a place on the internet they could go to?
Yeah, fruitbatsmusic.com. That's got all the everything on there.
People, FRUITBATSMUSIC.com. Right. Okay. And you know what helps me on tour? I've been doing the last 20 years. I should have done it 20 years before that. But diaries, tour diaries. You ever do that shit?
I used to do it. And I'm like, it's so funny you mentioned this because I was like,
no, because I know about that. I know about that. That's why.
Yeah, it's like I read some old ones of mine. Like I came across some, you know, and I was like, I can't believe I didn't remember any of it either. This is stuff from 15, 20 years ago.
Yeah.
And I was like, I don't even remember that stuff. It's like, if I had never written it down, I would never have remembered that day at all. It's like a whole day is gone in your memory unless you write it down.
Right.
So, yeah, I think I'm going to try it on this next one.
Okay, okay. And, like, put it out there so people can read?
Maybe, yeah.
Write along with you? Okay.
Yeah, yeah, either that or it's just for my eyes only. I'm not sure.
Yeah. Well, I use it also for kind of a discipline.
Yeah, yeah,
you
know, that's
keeps
good.
You focused
good.
On the thing because, like, how do you tour? Do you, like, I got this old vaudeville wisdom, right? When you ain't playing, you're paying.
Yep, I use that exact expression too. My booking agent had never heard that expression, but I was like,
it goes way back, actually.
Yeah, exactly. If you're not playing, you're paying, and now I'm 100% subscribed to that, although I also can't do too many shows in a row because my voice gets blown
That's
out.
That's the one thing, people. Like, fingers can get calluses, but not fucking vocal cords.
Yeah, and I'm 47 now, which is like, you know, I still feel young, still feel good, but it's like I'm feeling it a little bit more than I used to. And, we're hitting it pretty hard for 2 months.
And are you doing the kind of like big old loop of the country?
Yep. Big old loop of the country.
Now, the way I usually do it in springtime, I usually do counterclockwise because you want to get out of the south before it gets too hot and you want to wait for the north to thaw. But in the fall time, I do clockwise.
I think we're doing clockwise, actually, but it's backwards. Fast enough.
Okay, okay. But what you're finding out probably living here in California is we're way over on there's a lot of miles to travel before you get to the rest of the parts.
There's a lot of miles. It was great. Being in a Chicago band was amazing because you could you could tour in a van. You could do the West Coast in 2 weeks pretty easy, and you could do the East Coast in like a week and a half if you wanted. You could cover a lot of ground.
It's right there. In fact, you're right next to the fucking Eastern time zone. That's Grand Rapids, right?
Yep.
Or Indiana or something. Very close.
Kalamazoo,
Okay, okay. You know, you get done with the record. But are you already thinking of the next one?
Like, lately, yes. It used to be things were slower 20 years ago, just release-wise. And now I think I'm better at writing, too. So, yeah, I am already thinking of the next one. So, because I'm like... I feel like I still got stuff to say, and I'm good at saying it right now, too. So,
and you said you could write. You could write on tour. You know, to me, it's impossible. A lot of people I know, they can't write on tour, but you can. So maybe on this tour here, you might get some tunes up for the next show.
Yeah, I can sometimes. So not all the time. I'm not
Can I put this invite out there for you, Eric?
Yeah.
When you get that next batch and you record it, will you come back on the show and we can play it and talk about it?
I would love to, man.
Yeah. All right,
Yeah.
And one day you got to come to Pedro. Let me give you a tour.
Okay, I would love a tour of Pedro.
I've been. I came from Virginia when I was 9, and I know a lot about here.
Well, I'm just up the street, so I'll come on down anytime.
Thanks so much, and safe seas. Keep that keel in the water. I hope you have great luck on this tour. Truly.
Thanks, man. People, so good talking to you.
Absolute. Been April 6, 2023, edition. What Pedro Show? Keep your powder dry.